Well, we have quite a few people on the line tonight, too, already, so why don't we get going? I want to welcome everybody to the second seminar in our PPS Mentor Teleclass series. My name is James Phelps, and I am your host tonight. I'm the Dean of Education at PPS Success. And tonight we're very, very lucky to have with us Paul Cech Jr., who will be talking about Foundational Energies 101, Solitude, Culture, and Tribe. Paul Jr., for those of you who don't know him, is a holistic coach and owner of the Ashland, Oregon-based Cech Holistic Studio, and he has helped people from all walks of life set and achieve their personal and professional goals. And if you'd like to learn more about Paul and the services he offers, I invite you to visit his mentoring page located in the PPS mentoring section of our website at ppssuccess.com. I first met Paul about 5 years ago when I was working at the Czech Institute shortly after I finished my PhD work, and I have to say I was very impressed with him, not just because he was a Czech level 4 at a very young age, but he's a very astute and thoughtful student of the human condition, and I always looked forward to our conversations because I knew he brought a unique and insightful perspective to the table. So it's no surprise to me that he's building a successful holistic coaching practice in Oregon. This is a really sharp guy. Now, before we begin, I understand from Paul that he would like for tonight's teleclass to be interactive. So usually I would mute our phone lines, but I'm not going to do that tonight. But I would, however, ask that if you happen to be in a high traffic area or if you're on a cell phone that might pick up some echo effects, that you mute your own phone line by pressing *6. And then if you want to join in the conversation, you can unmute your phone at any time by pressing any button on your phone pad. So with those details out of the way, welcome, Paul. It's great to have you with us tonight.
Thank you, James. You're really kind. I appreciate that wonderful introduction.
Oh, well, you know, it's all true. And I definitely remember our conversations, especially politics, which we probably won't get in tonight. And that's probably a fortunate thing for everybody who's on the line with us. But as I said, always very interesting and insightful, and I always came away learning something from it. And I'm sure that your clients always feel the same sort of thing when they work with you.
Well, likewise, James. You're a bright guy yourself, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I want to welcome everybody myself. This is just really exciting for me to be able to talk to you guys. I first want to preface everything I'm going to say tonight by saying this is simply my perspective. I by no means claim to know capital T truth. All I can offer is my opinion based on my research and life experience. So if anybody's, you know, not resonating with what I'm saying, you know, I'm just going to try my best. That's all I can do. I do want to say, though, if you don't understand the term I use or if you have questions, you can feel free to jump in. If I'm pressed for time, I'll let you know, and we'll have to hold questions till the end if I feel like I'm having to rush. So, speaking of time, I'd like to thank all of you for sharing this time with me. I mean that sincerely because time is truly the most valuable commodity we have here. And I'd like to start this hour with a poll about time. So, I'm sure, let me just see how many people are out there. Just, say yay if you can hear me. Okay.
Yay.
All right, then we got some.
Hey there, we do have some live people on the phone with us, I promise.
Yes, yeah, some people are just probably not wanting to be quiet, to make noise. So basically, I just want to ask you, and you don't have to even answer out loud, is time seeming to speed up or slow down for you lately? Do you feel like time has accelerated or come to a creeping halt? And I think the answer to either of those is going to be yes. And the reason is because we judge everything by its effects on our perception of time. Dating, for example. When we evaluate a date for long-term potential, we usually use time as a gauge of our date. Now, hear me out. This sounds abstract. If the qualities of your date resonate with qualities that you value, then time will feel like it's slowing down, and your energy levels will ramp up. I think all of us haven't had an experience of talking to somebody all night about our dreams, our pet peeves, our past experiences, etc. And we were surprised to see that what we felt was so effortlessly many hours of constant attention and presence normally a very difficult thing to do. Yet, under these right circumstances, a night of constant energy output actually left us with more energy. So we're always judging our relationships and our use of energy by how it affects our perception of time. And there is two types of time. There's perceived time, and then there's chronological time. And so I'm referring to perceived time. So is there any doubt that sharing life with those that you resonate with improves your daily operational efficiency and greases the passage of time? I don't think so. I mean, I personally don't. We all know this intuitively. We can all feel when our energy changes, when our energy exchanges with others are building a charge or nullifying or draining our own charge. And when we feel drained or thrown off balance by another, time feels like it's speeding up, doesn't it? I mean, we often get freaked out because we as humans know we're going to die. So when we feel like time is speeding up, it also literally feels like we're accelerating towards death. So, and you are, really, because stress is a known factor in premature aging. So that's kind of a trippy thing about time, is it's related to our perception of others and our feelings of stress. And this is why we always tend to associate with elements of society that make us feel as if we are slowing down, or to put it another way, we associate with elements of society that we feel are creating a safety bubble that is expanding forward into the future. So who doesn't want to see their energy spent constructively and in a way that builds a greater whole than the sum total of the parts? So just so you guys know, I put an outline of this together myself, so I'm kind of following an outline, because otherwise on these topics I can easily get distracted, so I am following an outline here. Where was I? So who doesn't want to see their energy spent constructively? Like I said, we always want to see a whole that's greater than the sum total of parts. We are a collective guided by our intuition on our quest for timelessness. Really, that's kind of what we are, is we're just seeking our timeless nature collectively. And, well, let me digress. Let me give you my definition of intuition, because it might be a bit different from what you're used to. I define intuition, otherwise known as third eye, as our constant attention to feeling, to the feeling of the qualitative aspects of time. So intuition is not something you do or don't follow. It's your primary mode of experience. We are all individually and collectively following our intuitions. We all just trying to pass time with the least effort and the most safety and stability projected into the future as possible. So now this may seem abstract, but when you realize that all people are always following their intuition all the time, it becomes easier to develop compassion for where humanity is right now in 2009. You know, it makes it a lot easier to not point the finger, but really to point the finger back at the collective, at ourselves. I'll touch more on compassion later, but for now I just want to germinate an idea in you, an idea that has long been sown in the collective psyche by Eastern gurus and shamans and mystics. And that idea is, if everyone is seen to be following their intuition and seeking to improve their personal quality of life and that of their tribe, or in-group, then it makes it much easier to be open to or resonant with others, even others you vehemently disagree with, because you see that they have the same long-term goals as you do, and they've gotten to where they are in life using the same basic processes of intuition as you. So in essence, to blame other is also to blame God, and who really is in the position to be saying that the organizing force of the universe is wrong? So through intuition, we can develop compassion. Through compassion, we can be open to being in the space of other people that we need to be working with but aren't. So the only difference between you and the so-called other is the proportion or ratio of the primary energies of human consciousness we're about to discuss and the environmental context in which those individual energies move into action. So to recap, for those of you who just joined the line late, I was just describing intuition as the process we use to navigate our personal interactions, tribal associations, and patterns of action. Intuition is literally a feeling through of all the possible uses of our energetic and environmental circumstances and moving towards the patterns that we feel conserve or even net more energy than the acts themselves consume. We're always looking to be more efficient than just ourselves. I was also saying that the way we gauge whether we are conserving and netting energy is by feeling the effects of our personal associations on our perception of time. So if time speeds up, if we feel like whoa, or you know, anxiety or tension, it's very difficult to spend 10 seconds thinking that somebody's breaking into your house, for example. That's a hyper example of this. So if you think somebody's breaking in your back door, time's going to speed up, your heart's going to speed up. But if it's the other way and you're resonating with others and society and et cetera, time will slow. And such as when you're doing something you love, everybody knows that. Time seems to slow down, hours can pass. So the interesting quality of intuition is that it's totally neutral. It's even the most heinous tyrant intuited his way to power. The Pol Pots, the Hitlers of the world were elevated by the collective intuitive sense of the masses. Whether it was right or wrong, that's not us to judge. It's a neutral thing. And intuition has led us all to where we're at right now. And intuition also brought all civilizations into existence, including our global modern economic system, which is failing us so completely and amazingly as we speak. So it's a funny thing. I'm going to get later in the conversation to why it's neutral. So civilization is nothing more than earthly substances organized into material structures such as banks, Porsches, trash dumps, cell phones, etc., that resonate with the frequencies, timing cycles, and energy flux patterns that are emanating from our collective group. And our collective group has shared rhythms in which these energy patterns emerge. So literally, like when you look at banks and society and everything, you're seeing structures that are actually formed by our collective sense of self, timing cycles, and uses of energy. So civilization is merely the outward appearance of our culture. Our current civilization has emerged from a culture that places little value on preserving and flowing with the natural rhythms and cycles of nature. In fact, our culture has emerged from the shared scientific and religious view that nature is unintelligent, non-sentient, and therefore exists simply to serve man, serves man's will. We've managed to ignore the dissonant effects this would otherwise have on our quality of life. We've managed because we found, some 100 years ago, trillions of barrels of stored energy in the form of crude oil. And that has allowed us to amplify our own frequency and shift the dissonance that is actually existing between us and nature back on nature for a while anyways. And it's through our culture, through our synced timing with nature and our rapidly reduced use of energy that we can change our civilization to something that can't actually last far into the future. But right now, I don't think I would get much argument if I was to say that our current structure of civilization and culture is dissonant with nature. And it's kept that way because we have this easy supply of energy that helps us amplify our own resonant energy and sort of sublimate or submit nature's natural rhythms. That's not going to last for very long. So if enough people can manage to reorient their use of labor, natural resources, and capital to the cycles of nature again and take pride in trusting nature's inherent coherence, its wisdom, so to speak, then structure will readjust, to the new collective resonance of society. And that's our job. It's our job to establish the new collective resonance of society if we are concerned at all about the future. If we're not concerned about the future and we feel like time is slowing and we're in the company of others that, you know, we're happy with, don't do anything. Otherwise, you got to stop fueling the furnace, so to speak, and build up a dissonant charge. Okay, moving on. Okay, what to do about all this, you ask? Okay, I've given you this almost abstract build-up here. Well, what to do about it? Well, the silver lining of a highly dissonant system is that existence depends on people giving up more and more of their life energy and time for ever less reward and less intimacy with others. The only way the system can stay dissonant and keep pushing back nature is if we keep giving up more and more of our energy and free time. And it becomes more and more obvious as the dissonance grows what's going on. Our culture is ripe for change at the base level of tribal association. And tribal association is the root energy governing the way we perceive physical and material safety. So the first energy is that of tribal association. This energy has everything to do with working with others to make life easier. When people begin to lose faith in societal structures that support them, they then experience a vacuum energetically at the root level that can be filled by offering talks, gatherings, and workshops focused on creating stability around root issues, food, housing, durable goods, and other material necessities. So the silver lining to dissonance is the opportunity for resonance. And I hope all of us out there really look at what we do have to offer and what we do feel we are resonant with, you know, that it would be sustainable. So gardening and homesteading are in vogue right now, are increasing in popularity. I see young women and men on YouTube, Craigslist, and in their community sharing their passion for self-reliance and environmentally friendly ways to fill root needs. Change is happening now. You must trust that when you offer a sound way to fill root energy vacuum needs, that people will follow their intuition and feel the truth of your resonance. So we must trust our own intuition, and we must trust the intuition of others. And if we do have a clear root energy dysfunction, we know what to do about it. We have to offer the environment, offer the experience that will bridge the gap. So the second primary energy emerging from root energy or physical energy is the impulse to assure that your experience and life effort doesn't end with you. Wouldn't that be a waste? The second energy is the desire to reproduce, to pay forward your experience into the future, to your future self, which is often what we see when we look at children. It's this energy is also greatly suffers when a culture stays dissonant too long. An example of this is our public school systems, television and movie industry, and how they play a role in our children's education. There used to be a time when most of the knowledge and experience a child gained came from their family directly or from the local church or school run by people they knew and trusted. The pure example of a second level energy can be seen in the traditional Aboriginal rites of passage in the outbacks of Australia. Everything was passed orally and experientially to these children from a very tight-knit group, and they were very, very in sync with nature. So a pure example of Chakra 2 energy is that seamless transition between what they need to know and how they need to act and survive in the world. Today it's grown very, very dissonant. There's really a big gap between what's going on in the world and what we're taught. And I'm just old enough to confidently tell you that because it didn't take me more than a couple years out of high school to realize that, wow, that was a lot of time that I spent not really getting that educated at all. In fact, in a lot of cases, miseducated. So today, our kids are generally undereducated in the U.S. and in many cases, miseducated. And I think it's becoming more and more obvious that we need more schools with less kids per school and better learning materials that really explain the relationship we have between nature, since our relationship between nature is the thing that's creating dissonance right now. Many parents know that their kids need better education and more practical experience in the world. And this is why if any of you have a dream of making children's books or setting up gardening and wilderness classes or wilderness youth-oriented groups, teaching art and crafts such as knitting and woodworking and metalworking, etc., you should do them. As this system reaches its maximum dissonance, your offerings will appeal to parents who will begin to see that their kids might just need to live a more natural, grounded life if they too are to survive and reproduce. So, again, when dissonance happens at the second energy level in society, it opens up to you, the people who have the more grounded practical skills you know, not the skills of simply programming a computer or checking an email, but like practical stuff, that there will be a receptive audience for you. The third primary energy is that of competition, the desire to conquer, to get others to cooperate with you by force or by will. This is the level of novel creations, and it's the level of destruction of orthodoxy. So this energy in reverse, submission, or the lack of confidence in life skills and life purpose. So there's two primary directions for the third energy. It's outward projection, conquer, turning other people into yourself, your way. We've seen this in the movie The Matrix. The Smith and Neo are literally just resonant opposites. So you have Smith who strives to turn the Matrix into himself. I don't know if you've seen the movie, but at the end of the movie, everyone looks like Smith. That's a metaphor for chakra number three, or energy number three. So this energy in verse is submission. It's accepting life as it's given to you, not questioning, not resisting. And most of our society is in a submissive place on average. Otherwise, we wouldn't have these massive monolithic ivory tower institutions that are not so neatly falling down. So most people have submitted to the energy flow patterns of society, and this is why very, very few people ever start their own commune, church, business, or write their own book. And I encourage all of you who believe in your vision of a better business, a better school, a better restaurant, a better governance, to go out and run for office, any office, be a tutor or start a school, draft the business plan that you've been thinking about. This energy is that of competition or submission, and it is the energy that keeps us paying our taxes and dotting our I's. When your government and business become less and less responsive to the needs of the people, then the chances of getting elected go up. The chances of getting that buzz you need to launch your sustainable product go up. Believe in yourself and take some board seats and take some market share. The third chakra, the third energy is there for you to go out and show yourself. And we all need to. If we all have something to offer, we need to go out and show ourselves. The fourth energy is that of either compassion or fear. Now in the fourth energy. And it's simply the opposite, and fear, by the way, is simply the opposite of compassion, as I see it. Compassion is often called love when describing the heart-centered energy, or the fourth energy, but that is misleading because love is behind everything in the universe and precedes all individual energies like white light precedes a rainbow. But I'll have to leave that for another conversation. Just know that compassion and love are, I'm not considering them the same thing. So earlier, I alluded to what I feel the main lesson of intuition should be, and that is compassion. Compassion is the act of seeing someone in all of their flaws and saying, yes, yes, you are divine. Yes, you are my brother and sister. If compassion could talk, it would say, there's nothing to fear, there's nothing to lose, there's nothing to do. But obviously, that's a hard attitude to hold. This is why mystic sages say that the heart energy or compassion is the ultimate destination, or the ideal resting place for consciousness. Is in compassion. Although maintaining a constant state of compassion is the stuff of legends such as Jesus and Buddha, it is possible for all of us to get there for periods of time. A simple exercise of this energy would be to walk into a room full of people or with a person who you disagree with on many different subjects and sit and have a meal with them. Listen to their stories. See the process of intuition as being responsible for where they are and where you're at with them. And it'll help bridge the intellectual differences and will help merge with the sameness of their being as opposed to seeing the separateness, and the fear arises from the separateness. So we're seeing the sameness here. It's an exercise that is really beneficial because if you can stay there long enough, you can actually tactfully offer your truth to them without triggering them because they think that you are open to them, and you are. And also they'll also like you because you're listening to them and you're maintaining eye contact. When you actually have compassion for people, we see them as not being right or wrong, but just kind of where they need to be. But we all have to be, you know, moving towards a better future. It's easier to keep eye contact. It's easier to listen. And when you do that, it makes it much, much easier for them to open to what you're all about and what you got going on. So needless to say, it's very hard to stay purely in the heart center. But practice. Practice when you watch TV. And if you see people that have failed you or misled you, thank them for the lessons they have taught you as an exercise, as a build-up, so that when you go out into your community and you see the people that you have a hard time communicating with or the family members, you're preparing yourself to not seek disconnection but to see the actual shared reality of both of you. So if you can project compassion on someone you otherwise fear or dislike, then you are doing some of the most powerful work you can do to shift the resonance of society. Power structures are maintained by people, by keeping people pitted against themselves. If you can feel connection in your heart, you can instantly debase a dissonant, dysfunctional power structure, large or small. The fourth energy is like the middle C chord on the piano. It's really what it all comes back to. So moving to the fifth energy. The fifth energy is generally thought to reside in the throat area and is that of communication and listening. The throat, the fifth energy, is the tool of the third energy, which is, again, domination or submission. When the third energy is open or expanding, words will tend to leave the mouth or be typed on paper effortlessly. If the third center is shrinking, then the listening will tend to dominate speaking or writing. And speaking with clear articulation, total honesty, and in timely fashion, you are said to have a resonant heart, throat, and solar plexus energy. So I think we're all striving kind of for that, you know, to speak clearly what's on our mind with total honesty and in a timely fashion. So the throat is just super, super important from getting those lower energies to match the upper energies and emote them. I'll talk a bit more about some of the upper energies coming up here. So if you feel you're unable to speak up or say what's on your mind, then a great first step towards a better culture is to attend Toastmasters meeting or nonviolent communication classes. If you cannot frame your ideas in the right language for the culture you're in, you need to find someone who can help you speak that lingo. You need to work on your fifth energy. So the fifth energy is the realm where ideas turn into associated words and channeled into sentences and paragraphs. Anything you can do to make your thoughts and words match up will be of benefit to everyone and increase resonance in the fifth energy. If you feel you have no problem matching words to thoughts, then you might want to step back to the third energy level and explore what is holding you back from putting your words and ideas into the general stream of consciousness. So listening appropriately can be considered fifth energy level as well. One of the best exercises I know to develop listening is to find or invite a group of people together who like to make music of any kind. The only way coherent music can be made and maintained is if everyone is generally listening more than they are speaking or making sound. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to do, and it's really, really gets used to being present with other people. Another variation on the theme is what we call up here in Southern Oregon a heart circle, quote-unquote, a heart circle. These are popular and easy to create and simply revolve around people getting together, sharing space, and sharing with each other their wants, needs, and personal struggles in a neutral setting. It's really quite an exercise in listening and having compassion when you have to listen to 10 strangers speak every time you get to speak. And honestly, who doesn't want to be a great listener? So do it for the exercise and also do it to get some of your stuff off your chest. So taking the fifth energy into society, we are more often not told what is wrong and infrequently asked what is wrong. As our civilization grows more and more dissonant, it becomes ever more incapable of hearing or speaking the truth. So those who can find themselves being great managers, networkers, and activists will find themselves bridging the gap between where we really want our fifth energy to be and where society's fifth energy currently is. So I encourage all of you who are decent at managing people, networking, activist types, really, really important that you get out there now, because it's wide open. Everybody knows that most of what we're being told is not fully true. I mean, look at the banking situation. I mean, a couple of weeks before most of our ivory tower commercial banks completely collapsed, we were being told everything was really solid. So it's right now it's happening, people. So if you're good at networking and all that, you got to get out there. So the sixth energy is mind energy. It's also sight, vision. When you see, what happens? What are you really getting out of your eyeballs? Shape, color, texture, relative motion data of the world around you? You bet. The mind is all about referencing one thing to another. Keys to a lock, wheel to a hub, distance to destination, etc. The mind makes sense of the world around us by matching things up and trying to discover facts that establish and confirm our worldview. The mind is a place where our waking consciousness resides. And there's a yoga of the mind, in fact, and that yoga is the practice of seeing the interdependent, co-arising nature of all forms and trajectories as a one path to inner peace. So that's a heady concept, but I thought I'd throw that in there. Some people are mental yogis, loaded with facts, figures, time-oriented projections. And for those who are, I strongly encourage them to check their third and fifth energy centers again and get out there and do some public speaking on social trends, emerging industries, new technologies, or any other insight into how materially we've got into this mess and materially we can get out of this mess. That's what the mind does, is it tries to figure out how to put things together in a better way. This energy center is very, very subtle, as opposed to the wind of the throat, the blood of the heart, the third center, the digestive and reproductive organs of the second, and the material atomic structures appearing at the first center. So if you don't understand how finance works, cars work, government works, etc., and you feel that you really ought to know more about them, I really encourage you to start your research, get on the net, link up with others who can, because when your mind knows why a system is flawed, technically it makes it so much easier for your other energy centers to come into balance and do something about it. The mind is very powerful. So the message here is to study or stop studying and start sharing. If you feel like you don't know enough, study. If you know that you have an information addiction, stop studying and start sharing. And this kind of alludes to loneliness versus solitude, which I'll touch on the end of this discussion. So the seventh energy is the most subtle and is above mind. And that's a really difficult concept to grasp. It's how we relate to our universe. Or in other words, it's how we relate to God, what we think of God anyway. There's no standard definition of God. So that's why I like to say it's how we relate to our universe. This energy is really difficult to describe because it is fully subjective and experiential. It can never be proven right or wrong. It is, however, as real of an influence as it is. So it's so slippery, in fact, that most people leave it to others to try and make sense of. And when that's done on a collective scale, religion and philosophy are born. So religion and philosophy are just a whole lot of people saying, you know what, sounds like your idea of God's better than mine, I'll go with it. So, of course, all religion and philosophies have time and space icons at their core. Jesus died here, Buddha died there, and Jesus and Buddha went here and there, all that kind of stuff. And this is why Lao Tzu said many, many centuries ago, he who speaketh knoweth not. He who knoweth speaketh not. And all I can say here to try and avoid any, you know, judgment of people's philosophies or religions is it's a really an unwinnable struggle to get yourself tied into. So my message is to come back to the lower six energies. Once you arrive at God or your notion of the universe, just ask yourself, is this a beneficent universe? Is this a beneficent God? Is my God or universe compassion and are loving? If so, leave it at that. If you've got a vengeful and angry God and a malevolent universe, then I don't think you're going to be able to ever get your energy centers in balance, because you won't really have any positive outlook for the future. So you got to trust in whatever is going up in the seventh center and get out of it as quickly as you can. Just trust it. Don't think about it. You can't think about it. Go back down into the heart. So lastly, I'd like to talk about goals and goal setting. As you might remember learning from PPS mastery lessons, the most effective people in society at shaping our culture in their image and likeness are the ones who make the jump from dreaming to written goals. These are rare people who take the time to break their dreams down and write them into goals and action steps and reflect on them. They're very rare, but we need to become those people if we're going to make the changes we want to see in the world. And I don't really care what change you want to make, because I trust that we're heading in the right direction. I just really want you guys to start getting those goals down so that you can be clear about your changes. I'm just going to trust they're the right changes. Surely some of you have written your goals, but what I'd like to ask you all to do is write your goals for society as if you were society. For example, if I were to speak in this context, I would say, I will always try and eat fresh local foods when available. The key to shaping the culture you want is to set and follow the goals as if everyone else were to follow them too, as if everyone else were to follow them too, that the world would be a better place. And I think a good example is that if everybody tried to eat fresh local food when available, I think our society would change so quickly and rapidly that we wouldn't know what happened. So that's how I kind of want you to write your goals, is in the context if everybody did them, what would happen. And this is one of Gandhi's great ideas, by the way, and I concur. I'll give you one more example of this type of goal writing while I'm at it. Another one I wrote for myself is, every week I will make some measurable portion of the music I listen to. Repeat that. Every week I will make some measurable portion of the music I listen to. Now imagine what would happen if everybody in the world started to make some measurable portion of the music they listen to every week. Holy wow. I can't imagine. Most people don't even know where to begin making sound. So that would get us so integrated and connected quickly. We'd have drumming, singing, music making of all types happening in houses all over every neighborhood. This would lead to a much more cooperative, self-supporting, and grounded society. I believe it would anyway. So when you frame your goals in the context of society, but write them in the language of self, then it is much easier for you to share your goals with others, because you won't be pointing a finger at them saying, this is what you do wrong, this is what you should do right, etc. You'll create the space for them to have the experience of why you wrote the goals in the first place. Our goal is always to give other people the experience of why we are doing things, not necessarily the mental. That's one of the hardest places to get at people, is through the mind. Now, some people like me, I'm good through the mind, but I'm sometimes tough on experience. So it's a wild world. Have compassion for the self. Okay, so with goals in place, you can now know clearly which people in your life are your friends or contributors to your goals, and which people are just acquaintances and who share your old habits of action and dysfunctional action. So the difference between a friend and an acquaintance is somebody who keeps you feeling, you know, who resonates with your negative self-talk, who resonates with your self-destructive habits. Hey, man, let's get a beer, let's hit a bong, or whatever it is, or let's go see a movie. If you know intuitively that you really need to be more focused, you got to find friends who have the qualities that you like. So big difference between friends and acquaintances. Through goals, you can also assess whether or not you need to go out into the world and develop your skills and balance your energies through interaction with others. We generally call this loneliness, when we have that feeling like we really need to be out there in the world, sort of pumping up our experience and kind of figuring out what energies we really have mastered and which ones we need to work on. Or whether you need to go into solitude and start creating. A lot of people spend tons of time out in society, and they're smart people, but they know that they need to go into solitude, create an audio book or an article or a CD or whatever it is, and start affecting more people. So loneliness is when you don't feel like you have a full perception of what you need to be doing, and solitude is when you pretty much know that you really ought to be turned inward at the heart level, using all of your other energies to produce the words and thoughts and experiences that we need to have. So that's kind of just my little take on energies. I want to thank you for listening and open up the line to any questions if there are any. So, anybody?
And don't forget, if you've muted your line, you can unmute it by pressing any button on your phone tap.
Well, everybody must be very satisfied with my explanation. So I'm going to leave it at that, because I think, unless there's questions, that was a complete thought as far as I could tell.
Well, you know, part of my joy in participating in these is that I get to ask my questions too. And
Excellent.
So, you know, I do have a question for you, and I'd love to hear your answer. You know, you talked a lot about intuition, and I think that's a very fascinating topic to raise. In part because I sometimes think, especially having been a teacher a bit myself, that Western society, in particular, members of Western society, have sort of become divorced from intuition, which certainly, you know, intuition is one of our naturally endowed gifts. And so, one, I wonder whether you disagree that we've sort of learned to tune out our natural intuition. And if you think that that's true, I mean, how do you have any suggestions about how we might get in touch with it? Because, I mean, I think there are things that were we really to pay attention to our intuition, we'd probably do just fine. For example, like eating locally grown foods, as opposed to purchasing something that you buy in a metal can, right, or a plastic
right.
box. I mean, it seems like intuition would tell us, before we even look at the packaging, you know, hey, you know, there's something wrong with that. You know, there's the real broccoli right in front of you, but you're buying those stuff in a plastic bag. So it seems like we've gotten out of touch with that. And so, you know, how do we get back in touch with it? And how do we, you know, and once you're in touch with it, how do you trust it too? Because I think that we're also told, you know, here's what the FDA says. And
right.
this is the government, you know, this is the authority. So you can eat according to the food pyramid, even though, you know, there's lots of evidence to the contrary. So what do you think about intuition and how we can kind of get back in touch with it?
It's a good question, and honestly, I see intuition quite differently than most people. So I really tried to lay it out, but I'll just kind of go over my take again. I'm not saying your take's wrong, but I see it quite differently. So,
sure.
I see intuition as the process of all of us kind of feeling our way through life, feeling. And most of our energies, by the way, are not conscious. They're subconscious. We're you know, the energy to reproduce, you know, the energy to have sex and have children is actually beyond most people. They're almost powerless. I mean, think of how many people spend so much of their time and money on porn and dating and stuff. I mean, intuition's kind of a slippery slope, and if you peg it down and say that it's this and not that, then you start kind of getting into judging when somebody's being intuitive and when somebody's not. And, you know, it sort of leads to orthodox structures, mental structures. So I like to see intuition as the neutral process of all of us feeling our way through our reality based on our own experiences and individual energies, because we all have our own unique package of these energies that I described. Nobody has the same resonant package of these primary energies. So that's why I said compassion. You know, when you look at society, try not to think it's right or wrong. Just think, is it in resonance or is it in dissonance? Is it sort of destroying the natural world, or is it sort of functioning with it and even stepping it up to a higher level, such as like what the internet has done and, you know, Hubble telescopes. That's a good example of society. Bad example of society is McDonald's and clearing the rainforests for cattle. So what I suggest for everybody with regard to intuition is see that intuition is governed by these primary energies and try and become steep in these different energies. How much am I moved by material security? How much is my life energy motivated by acquiring more money, a better piece of land, a faster car, or this tool or that thing? Is it serving you? Move up to the second energy and say, what is motivating me to engage in these relationships, or why am I allowing this person to, you know, this and that, these particularly male-female relationships. Is that what I want? Do I really want to produce a child right now? You know, you got to, because all these entities don't truly exist in a vacuum, you kind of just got to play with them and work your way through them. And so, yeah, you can go all the way up to the level of mind. A lot of people pick up that food you were just talking about and say they don't think at the level of mind that this is definitely more nutritious. This is definitely going to extend my life. They're thinking at a different level. They're thinking at the money level. This is cheaper. This will fill my belly. Most people don't have enough mind development to know what intuition is going to create resonance or dissonance in their life. So for those people, I would say, how much do you know about food? Can you tell me what humus is or what organic matter is? If they don't have any idea, then I'd say to them, well, you will reach resonance in your life and balance if you can sort of start to realize through the mind what's going to happen to you when you make these choices. So all these different levels, I mean, even the heart level, talking about compassion and love and acceptance, you know, a lot of people don't see other people outside of themselves as being part of a collective or part of the universe as a whole. They see an enemy. They see an intruder, a resistance. And so it's really hard to say that one person's following their intuition and another one's not, because everybody's sort of always trying to seek to have a more stable life and to be, you know, efficient. But that manifests in all of these different relationships. So that's, to me, that's the mystery of life, is that the same basic process of feeling through and the same primary energies are creating this manifold universe of all these different forms, you know, this universe of manifold forms. And we're, you know, this is where the seventh level comes in that I briefly touched on. If you try and make rational sense of the universe, you're going to be like a moth trying to fly into the flame, but keep hitting the glass, so to speak, you know. You really, to wrap your head around the universe is difficult, and I think when people start to say that this person's intuitive, that person's not, et cetera, it's just a slippery slope, that's all. So, I don't know, did that make any sense to you?
Sure, yeah. I think we're in a lot of ways talking about the same thing. It's that sense, as you said, of resonance or dissonance, and learning to be a little bit aware of that resonance or dissonance in our lives and be willing to act on it when we sense that.
Yeah, but some people don't know what to sense. Like, if you put that, if you, all you've known is that packaged food, I mean, you were raised on
that. That's right.
You don't know. You have no reference point.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry, I interrupted somebody.
No. I was interrupting. I'm sorry.
No, please join in.
So then, for people that have no idea of intuition, how can I, as a person, help them develop that? What could you give me an example of? Opening up, helping them open up their intuition so they're not walking through life pretty numbified, you know?
Well, see them first and foremost as following intuition as best as they can.
Right.
So if you don't like how their habits of action and you don't think what they're doing for the world is going to net the kind of world that you want to be in, come from the heart space, enter them seeing just as you. The difference is that you must have something to offer them. You don't want to force it down their throat. You just engage in a conversation, and as things come up naturally, you keep that open heart space, you're not judging them, you're seeing them as also guided by intuition at every moment. They're also here as a byproduct of eons of light tearing itself up into consciousness, then it'll make it a lot easier for you guys to find common ground. And when somebody can just listen and keep eye contact and keep smiling even though you don't agree with them, and just come back with a tiny little point, you know, it's not such a bad thing, except for the fact that it does put poison on the soil, and you know, it is kind of a fact. I mean, as far as I can tell, anyways, that you know, your organic matter disappears when you farm this way. I'm just using farming as an example.
Right.
And the moment you feel dissonance come up between you two, go back to the heart center and don't try and advance your agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And that, honestly, is the best thing I can say. This is why all the mystics and yogis always try and refer back to the heart. It, all the energies sort of spiral into the heart to infinity. You know, it's,
mm-hmm.
it's as I see it. So we're all following the intuition. It's just that it takes time for consciousness to realize what it is. And
I really like your statement that you said, write goals for society as if you are society. That's a good one. Because not a lot of us are doing that right now at all.
I can't take credit for that. I got to give Gandhi that. Gandhi sowed that seed in me.
Great.
I don't think I have an original thought. This is why I have so much compassion, I'm trying to develop it, is because, you know, it's really a slippery slope when you start saying that some people are tuned in and other people, you know.
Well, it starts you on a little bit of a judgment there, too, you know, where now you're judging a person by, oh, he has intuition or he doesn't. So, you know, yeah, I hear what you're saying. But the whole talk was great. I took 3 or 4 pages of notes.
Wow. Awesome.
I was writing the whole time. It was really good.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I don't know if there's any more questions. I'm happy to field them. Otherwise, I know what I said was a bit oblique. It's kind of, I'm a mental person, so it's really hard to like make it work
no,
for
I
everybody.
Think there just needs to be a follow-up. This is really good. It's all so informational, but there's so much more. You know, it'd be a good hour. Next hour would be follow-up and get into more maybe details of it.
Well, is there anything that you wished? While I have a couple minutes, that I might have went further in. I mean, is there anything in particular you wish you would have heard more about?
Let's see. No, I really think your point about how, of course, all the chakras, we're always working to get them all running, as I understand, and I think that. Like you kept mentioning, if something wasn't occurring at a certain level, go back to, you know, energy 3 and figure out why you're not getting your information across via the throat chakra, you know.
So, right.
Okay, go back to third energy. Something's not clear, or something's stuck in the third energy. So I think eventually the point is to all of the energies to work together. And I don't have any corrections at all.
No, and that's pretty much it. I mean, you're jumping right now to some of the highest teachings I think can be offered, which is if you can trust at the seventh energy or the seventh level that the universe or God is always working in behalf of consciousness. It's always beneficent. It's good. It's generally foundationally good, as opposed to what a lot of our religions teach us, which is the opposite. Or there's a wrathful God, or nature's fallen, all that kind of stuff. Then it makes it much easier for you to see other people as being where they need to be in time and space and doing the things they need to do. And then it puts it all back on you. It turns your whole focus inward at the heart level, and then you can see your lower energy centers coming into alignment with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I said, you know, these different energy centers are like colors in the rainbow, but the truth is that there really is only white light.
Right.
And so that's kind of another sort of seventh level kind of thing to play around with. But the bottom line is the more compassion you can develop for the people who you think are causing your bright future to go down, the quicker you guys will merge, and whichever one of you has the truth is closer to the resonant truth about what needs to happen, eventually that will come to the forefront. And that's where you have to trust again in whether or not this universe is progressive or regressive.
Mm-hmm.
So
very well.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Did I unmute?
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Come on in.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I tried to push a button and it said you can't dial out, and I was like, I don't know.
You have 5 minutes.
I have a quick question then. As far as just dealing with people of the world, I've been in kind of laid up and isolated for a long time, so I've got the thinking part down really well.
Good.
And it's
great.
Kind of getting back into dealing with people out in the world.
Yep.
And I've just got a really hypersensitive energy field right now.
Yep.
So it's just being out there. I completely see them as, you know, organisms and spirits on planet Earth doing their little paths, and just it's almost like I'm too detached. I can watch them and I can see them, and I don't really judge where they're at. It's just, but it can be abrasive to me.
What part is abrasive?
I guess if they're really throwing off a lot of negative energy or something.
Definitely. And honestly, there's some really hard stuff to be present with in this world.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It's just, so I go out there and it's just, you know, I was laid up with surgeries and stuff, so I was a really long time away from people, and it's just, I never expected something like that to happen to where I got, where it's just like every person you walk by, it's almost like you pick up every emotion, everything that they're feeling. It's just, by the time you get back in the house, you're just exhausted.
Well,
the
exhaustion is coming about because there's a dissonance created in your energy field from what's going on. And really, it's possible for you to walk through society and be the opposite, see the symmetry, see the beauty, see the organization. And you alluded to that earlier, but I think it's more of a sixth energy concept, and it has, you got to move that down into the heart. And the easiest way to do that I know of is to just start associating with more people. Don't get into discussions with them. Start with music. Start with stuff that's non-mind oriented, and just get used to sharing that space again and sort of bringing yourself back out. And then once the music breaks, you guys might go to the potluck, and then, you know, you might start engaging at these different levels, the mental level, or talking about safety and security and tribal stuff and all that. But eventually, you know, if you have that sharp mind that you're talking about and you see the things that need to change and what needs to happen, you're going to have to get comfortable in this world as it is. Otherwise, you'll stay lonely. And that's what I talked about, loneliness and solitude. You got to get out there enough to realize that you should really come back in and start producing something for the world, you know, back inside to solitude.
Yeah,
and right now it sounds like you haven't gotten out enough to become comfortable again since your surgeries and stuff.
Well, it would be nice to be around at least a certain larger portion of the time around people that you don't have to explain all that to, or that you just that isn't so much work to it. That isn't so much work.
Yeah, potlucks, music circles, you know, you can just talk about the food, and I don't know. I mean, I don't really have a perfect formula because our societal structure has atomized us. It's broken us apart as good as it can.
It really has. The whole social structure right now is just really unhealthy on so many levels, but just interpersonally.
To bring it back to where you want it, you have to go out there and you have to hold the feeling of connection more than you feel the dissonance. And just go sit in public for an hour, and every time a dissonant thought or a negative thought comes up, just question it. Who's to say? Do I know more than God? Do I know more than the universe? Is that really true? You know, every time it comes up, question yourself. And eventually, this is kind of what Ramana Maharshi, one of the great yogis of India, said. This is the process of self-inquiry. Where is this judgment really coming from? It's coming from self. So all there really is self. So when you see self and other, like I was alluding to, then you're actually pulling yourself into your heart center. And until you can stay in your heart center very long, you're not really going to be able to jive with many people. You'll either have friends or acquaintances. And most of the time they'll be acquaintances, people who sort of keep you feeling about yourself how you already do feel. I don't know if I'm saying too much here.
A couple of, you know, good friends that I can kind of, you know, at least have discussions with and feel a little more, you know, in line with. But it's just like that thousand, like having a thousand radios all tuned into, you know, different. It's just like this cacophony of noise.
The beautiful thing, though, is once you get to hear the symphony of that, once you hear like the actual orchestra that's playing, not as chaos but as an orchestra, you will be a very, very powerful person to be around. Like the space you'll hold will be very, very unusual, and people will resonate with it quickly. They'll want to be like that. So
I've had dreams like that before, where I hear each person, each little cell on planet Earth make its own sound, and then how it, as it spins together, it starts to make, you know, a good noise, a really, you know, universal hum.
Write poems about it. Write short stories, even if they're not real. Just project these beautiful images that you have onto paper. This is, again, the fifth energy level here. Get it out of you. All that beauty that you have in you, you got to get it out of you. That's the purpose of solitude, is you got to stay alone long enough to get it on paper. And sometimes a friend can help you too, but generally you really have to do it yourself. So
I guess I would feel like it's just rambling and people don't want to hear it. So I'm just like,
well,
whatever.
But that again, that as soon as that pops up, you got to ask yourself, do I believe in myself or not? You know, you can't live life not totally believing in yourself. So
that's true. Well, that helps me. I appreciate your feedback on that, because you know, this was a really good hour we've had here. So
yeah,
thank you.
So I really appreciate it.
Like I said, thank you for sharing this time with me. You know, if it wasn't for you guys, I wouldn't be me. So,
well, I really appreciate it. I appreciate the whole series, because I'm going to be on every single one of them.
Excellent.
That's great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good day, guys.
Thank you once again, Paul, for joining us tonight. And those of you who are with us, you should know that this is the last time we'll have heard from Paul. We're going to have quarterly calls from all of our mentors. So Paul will be joining us in the next 3 months or so for another one of these. So
Okay. Maybe
he will have some follow-ups on the fun stuff that he talked about tonight. And it was really fascinating, and I think for everybody who was with us tonight, this was a great introduction to the kind of insights you bring to your clients, so that's great. And I want to encourage anyone that feels as though they could benefit from Paul's coaching to have a look at his mentor profile on our website at www.ppssuccess.com, and you can find his profile in the PPS Mentoring Services section once you're there. Next week, I will be hosting two mentor teleclasses. The first is with J.P. Sears on the Insights on Holistic Emotional Healing, and that's on February 24th. And then the second one will be with Vidya McNeil on Business Basics, Policy and Procedure, Why They're Good for Your Business, and that's on February 26th. And both of those will be held at 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So once again, thanks, Paul. Thanks for everybody who joined us tonight. That was a really fantastic teleclass, and Paul set the bar high for the next teleclass. I'm sure it will be they'll be fantastic as well. So thanks again, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good
Thank
night.
You. Bye. Good night, everyone.
Good night.